Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Thanks for listening to DIY for Business. It's Russ and Greg with you. Greg, how you doing?
I'm slammed, my man. I am slammed.
Well, okay. So, you know, we've teased this so many times. And right. You just gave me the thumbs up to talk about your new venture.
Yes. So
I think we should probably do an entire show on this at some point, but let's get into it. So there'll be more, but give us the news.
How long can we tease this? We're gonna make this like a whole series of episodes. But right. You know, we've talked about our other podcast, Third Shot, which is a pickleball podcast, and that has led us to the opportunity where we're gonna be actually opening up pickleball facilities, indoor pickleball facilities in Las Vegas. And we are the regional developers for the Dilldinkers franchise. And we are proxied to open up the entire Las Vegas region for indoor pickleball for Dilldinkers.
Very cool.
And the reason why I'm slammed is before we got on, I'm putting together my travel plans because I'm still based here in Northern California to travel down to Las Vegas. And we're doing some walkthroughs of different locations. We're pretty far along on a couple of locations, and it looks like we're going to be meeting with contractors. We're going to be meeting with the realtors. We're just finalizing the lease agreements, and then it's game on. It's build this thing out.
How long is it going to take before you're playing on your court? What do you think? Is it a year?
No, I believe that if everything goes as planned, by the end of the year, we will have our first facility open. And if everything goes as planned, we'll have the second facility open in April. So that is what's scheduled right now. And, you know, everything's kind of got out of line. The biggest problem in Las Vegas right now is pulling permits. Pulling permits for the construction in Las Vegas is getting postponed 3 months. For simple permits.
Oh, wow.
And then you get the build, right? So it's that's what's pushing us out to the end of the year and into next April. It's not that I have all the builders that I've kind of identified. We have it all spec'd out. We're ready to go on all this. It's just a matter of getting all the permits done and actually finalizing the lease. That's the first step. And then getting all the permits done. Yeah.
Right.
But it's potentially, we're ready to open by the end of the year. So that'd be cool because it's cold and people don't want to play outdoors. They love to play indoors during the wintertime. Maybe they have some family coming in from out of town. They want to, you know, play some pickleball together for the holidays. We will have the facility ready to go for them if we can get this open by, before the end of the year.
Well, it's Vegas. They don't want to play outside when it's hot either in the summer. So you're going to do great.
Thank you. That's the plan. Yeah. You know, it's people always point to the heat of Las Vegas and hey, who wants to play in 110 degrees, right?
Right. Right.
And it's 110 degrees a lot of the year for, you know, maybe 6 months a year. But the other 6 months, it's windy or it's cold.
Exactly. Yeah. Or
I don't know if people have seen the videos. Oh, man, when it rains in Las Vegas is not prepared for rain. So it floods.
Right.
There's no drainage, right? So all of these weather conditions is perfect for people to play indoor pickleball because there's a huge pickleball community out in Las Vegas. And travelers that come into Las Vegas that play pickleball, it's perfect to have an indoor facility, which there really isn't a lot out there right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would imagine, like, there's so many great places for an indoor facility, Vegas being one of them. I think actually, you know, like the Bay Area, okay, outdoor facilities are, that's that works because our weather is so, you know, like
just, comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're used to, what's the weather span? Oh, it's between 60 and 80. Okay.
Right. Right.
But there's other places, and actually our guest, maybe, you know, she's also a pickleball player and loves pickleball. And we're not going to turn this into a Third Shot podcast, but
we'll
have to bring her on over there as well. So Jennifer Christensen, you're playing and you're up in Alaska. That would be a great spot for a facility as well, wouldn't it?
It sure would. As I said before, I have already started looking into it. I think there's a couple courts up here, but there's definitely more people interested in it than have ability to play. Yeah.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, that's the problem. Like I've tried to get into pickleball. Like I don't play very often. I go and I give it a shot and I do as much as I can. But the problem and why I'm not playing is every single time I go to the courts locally here, they're completely full with, like, you know, a long, you know, row of rackets waiting for people, or, you know, paddles for people to just, like, wait in line. It's like, okay, well, I guess I'm not going to play today. every time I get disappointed every single time. So now I got a place to go. I'll get out to Vegas. And,
Jennifer, not only are you a pickleball fan, but you're a business person. So this is the perfect episode to make the announcement about us opening up in Las Vegas. Tell us a little bit about what you do, and then I'm going to pick your brain on advice you can give us for promoting our pickleball facilities in Vegas. But tell us a little bit more about what you do right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little over 13 years, digital marketing agency. We started in Alaska, obviously, started from here. And then 6 years into it, we expanded nationally. So we mainly work in the health, fitness, wellness space, as far as that's like our core clientele. A lot actually in mental health as well, which I think ties in with physical health too. And it's been an incredible journey. We were just, you know, two women in Alaska that saw what was happening with the digital market. We established that here. And then when we expanded nationally, we've been on the Inc. 5000 list for the past 3 years of the fastest growing, you know, one of the fastest growing companies in the U.S.
And congratulations.
Thank you. And really just found our niche of what we do well. So I love helping businesses grow, especially ones like pickleball, which is so great. Yeah, any free advice, I'm happy to share.
Awesome. Well, you know, we just did a show. So, you know, we're as I mentioned in the previous episode, the way that we're launching these episodes is they're sort of in bulk, so you can stream the different episodes. So our previous episode that we just did, hopefully everyone listening to this one just listened to, was about AI. And we were talking about AI with your CRM and, you know, combining like your Slack messages, your Gmail messages, pulling all that information together to, you know, start to figure out like who's a good customer within your database. But we didn't really get to touch on in that one was utilizing AI for digital marketing. And that question came up, but we didn't get an answer. So it was a cliffhanger. We're giving that one to you. How are you bringing AI into your business to help people to better market them?
So I'm going to answer that a little bit with a quick background of context. So always been kind of an early adapter. That's just the way I'm built. And so started really getting into AI about 3.5 years ago. And even before OpenAI, ChatGPT launched, and really saw, okay, this is, again, like digital marketing, this is the next thing of where things are going. I just want to give a caveat, like most people, you get into AI, you start using it, and then you tend to have this sort of like dark night of the soul of, it just feels very overwhelming. Where is this going? So I want to give all that context. I've been through that process over the past 3 years. Our whole team is using it. We're kind of past that piece of it. And for people that are just coming into it and wondering how and where should I use it in marketing, The most obvious and easiest use case is not the free version of ChatGPT, the higher level version of ChatGPT, minimum $40 a month. I would highly recommend the $200 one, but $40 to start with if that's where you want to go, and really start brainstorming with ChatGPT. So you really, you literally, like, you're talking to somebody. That's the biggest mindset issue that I've seen with business owners, is they want to use it as a functional tool. And it is a great functional tool to, like when you were talking about CRM or operations or all those things, when it comes to marketing and even your business intelligence use cases, you can use it as a, think about having a marketing assistant or even a partner, depending on how much information you want to share, somebody that you're literally brainstorming through your ideal clients, you're brainstorming through the market, you're having it research the market, who in the market is most likely to buy, what are the triggers that would make them buy. You can really have that sort of deep conversation. So that's where I would start. Because if you don't have the deep strategic conversations, then the tactics aren't going to be as effective.
Yeah. One of the things that came up in that previous episode was, like, how do you teach the AI agents about your product to get it promoted more often? You know, that's one of the big challenges, is, you know, to position your product or your service correctly so that the AI agents will find you and promote you to the right prospects out there, the right people doing searches. Do you work with your clients on that topic?
I do. I'm actually speaking on that. And next week I'm doing a whole webinar, free webinar on, it's called GEO. So it's basically the replacement for SEO. And really, I mean, that's really what it is. And the most important thing you can do moving forward is to make sure not only are you ranking still locally for the SEO, but to be able to rank on those AI overviews and AI searches, because more and more people will never even hit your website. They're just going to look on AI. I think it will get to the point where they'll have AI searching for them on AI, right? That's already exists. So yes, there are definite techniques to that. At this point, they're still pretty technical. So it still has to do with, like, the schema on your website, how well you have authority. So, like, you, Greg and Russ, you guys having, like, the podcast show, you could actually use that authority that you have on the podcast show. I mean, I'd have to, like, look at everything and then give you, like, an analysis. I'd be happy to do that. But you could use the authority you already have, the people that are following you, and actually use that to help your authority score in Las Vegas. So you basically have to show the AI overview that you're answering, like, the questions that people have most specifically. You're answering them the best with the best content, but also that you're a reliable source. So it's twofold. It's similar to what SEO was, but it's honestly quite a bit harder so far anyway. It's been more challenging. So
yeah, and I think part of the challenge there is that we're all figuring it out right now. Not just us, the people that are trying to, like, you know, get our sites to show and get our content to show, but also on the other side of that, like, how are the algorithms judging what to show? All of that's just moving parts right now, right? I mean, nothing's set, and it's going to change over time for the most part, right? Or what do you think?
I think there's some clear data already. Like, we have hundreds of clients, so we're running all those data sets, you know, from all of our clients, looking at what's working and what's not. I think there's some clear data. I don't see a lot of people talking about it yet because it is at the beginning. But if you look at AI overviews, almost every single AI overview that I've researched, at least the clients that we have, they have authority scores of over 30. So, like, AI is not giving information from companies that are not well vetted. It's taking the top answers, right? So, like, that's a clear data point. That's indication that is how that algorithm is working. And then you've got the most specific answers. So the way people are searching in AI is very different than how they would search on Google. So what we're seeing is that where it used to be with SEO, that you would write these huge 2000, you know, word blogs and, like, tons of data, and you try to, like, get very broad marketing so that people would find you from all different angles. That's not how people are searching AI. They're searching I want to know what the best pickleball court is in near me. You know, is there a pickleball court near me? What is the cost of pickleball? If I'm new to pickleball, you know, or if I'm at this athletic level, will I be able to play pickleball? They're asking specific questions that are personal to them. And you're not going to win the game by just having general information on your website. You're going to lose big time. So you have to go specific. You have to have pricing. You have to have all the details that you can possibly think of that your clients would ask about.
Is it blogs? Is it, you know, is it interviews? What would you do?
Yeah. So the way we're doing it that we're having the most success with now is threefold. So one is like super robust FAQ section. So like that used to be, yeah, it mattered before, but now it's like hugely important. And you'll see it in the overviews, like the ones that have the pricing and the detail and all of that information in their FAQ are the ones that show up versus a general blog. You can do it in a blog, but if you're going to do it in a blog.
Help keep our community safe and healthy during National Prescription Drug Take Back Day, October 25th. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeback.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent drug misuse before it starts.
Better have detailed answers to questions. So don't think of the blog as general information. Think of it as answering specific questions that people would have. Ideally, I think, is video/podcast. Take your video/podcast that you're talking about all these things and then make it into content on your website. So that's kind of the techniques that we use over and over again. And then outside of that whole GEO area, you've got Meta, you've got those ads, which are operating on a totally different plane right now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Music to my ears about the video and podcast, because we just checked those two boxes. So that's awesome. Pricing set. So check that box. We got that. All right. We're going to put all this in. You know, one of the, we're talking about the whole Vegas thing, and it's really unique because, you know, you think about indoor pickleball and majority of the country, it's not really a destination location, right? It's for the locals, right? To find the play at, but Vegas is a little different. You know, we might have visitors from all over the world,
right?
And it's a different strategy, right? It's a different marketing strategy, it's a different audience, right? You got to go after it. It could be extremely expensive if you didn't know what you're going to do, because you don't want to just blow it out to the entire world. Like, how do you figure out how to reach the correct audience, whether it's pickleball or anything else, to make sure that, you know, you're not wasting your efforts and you're not wasting your money going after people that aren't good prospects?
That's such a good question. I'm a big believer in the old school method, because as much as I love AI, I love digital marketing, so often people use those techniques and they don't do basic foundational marketing. So the first piece basically is, what is your lowest hanging fruit? I mean, that's such a business term, but literally, who are the people who you know are already interested in pickleball? They're looking for a place. They just can't get in somewhere. So like that is like your core ideal first market that is the easiest to convert. So the way that I would reach those people would definitely be through Meta campaigns. You know, so you would target people locally in the area. You do geo-targeting, probably by certain zip codes and certain income levels, depending on, you know, those things. People who have expressed interest in pickleball. That would be the easiest, like, immediate target market that you would go with. Once you have a base level of those clients, then I would go to the next level. So then I would go to people that are flying in. You know, how do you target them? The best way to target them is usually through Google Business Profile, GEO, because they're going to be searching. So that would be online. They're actually searching for that when they come in. And then the key is to make it super easy for them to book, a really easy booking system. You actually say to them, you know, we're open to people that are out of town. Maybe you have a package specifically for them. Mm-hmm. The next level, which is the hardest one to convert, would be people who are like, maybe they're a little bit more like Russ. They're like, oh, kind of like pickleball, kind of don't. Like, well, I like it, but like, is it really like a big deal to me? Or I've heard about it. My friends are into it. That level you have to educate. So that level you have to actually like, this is why you would love pickleball. This is why this is great for you. This, you know, that's a much harder group to go after, but you don't even go after them until you've got your first two down. You don't even try. Like get your profitability right for those first two bays. And then once you have that, then you start going after the people that would be a little bit harder to convert, that you can educate. You do free like sessions, or maybe you do teaching people that you have there that can do like a free setup so they can see what it's like or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're going to definitely have the beginner clinic. So that,
there you go.
That is something that we can get into the FAQs, right? Do you have beginner clinics? Yes. We take people that have never played before. We'll spell it all out for them in the FAQs.
I love that. I think you're going to do great. I think it's even better market than Alaska. Although Alaska, like 8 months out of the year, we got to have that indoor court, right? But I think you've just got a bigger population too. People coming in. So
plus if you got all the people traveling to Vegas. So it sort of goes beyond too, even the local market, right? It's like you're probably reaching out to even like travel agents and whatnot to, so that you can kind of pull in groups of people or businesses, or there's such a wide net you could really cast if you had the money for it.
are there pickleball associations like in other states? That would be I would do market research on like what states have the most people coming to Vegas for business conferences and things like that. And then are there people that are in associations in those states and reach out to them? That'd be a great direct, super cheap marketing angle.
Yeah.
From the travel side. Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Yeah. It's a fantastic outlet for these conferences that come into Vegas, right? I mean, how many people have gone to a conference in Vegas? Almost all business people have probably been to at least one conference in Las Vegas at one time in their lives. And then they go, I'm done with this conference. I need to get out of here.
Right.
And there may not be gamblers or they're, you know, whatever, drinkers or whatever. They're looking for something athletic. They're looking something that, you know, keep their fitness up. Well, this is perfect for those people. Yeah. And if you know, the convention holders, hey, send them our way.
Exactly. I've done so much with the Google business profile. For various companies. Greg and I worked advising a bunch of small to medium sized businesses for years, and one of the things that we would help them out with was the Google business profile. And what, in your opinion, because everybody has to deal with this, what are the top like optimizations that somebody should be doing to actually like drive business in from a Google business profile?
I mean, the obvious one is reviews, of course, and then responding to reviews within 24 hours. Those are like, that's just table stakes right on there. The other areas and optimizations that I see just totally underutilized. If you look at the stats, the people who have, I think it's like 50, I'd have to go back and look at it. It's 50 or 60 photos/videos or more on their profile have 80% more views. So Google doesn't tell you that that matters, but clearly it matters. So it's how often you're touching it. Then, so those pieces. And then I do see a lot of people not set up their service, like their actual services of who they're targeting correctly. So just making sure that those are your top areas, your top keywords, the top things that you want people to know you for. Taking it a little bit deeper, I would say, a lot of clients, when they set that up, they put in there what they think their top services are, but they don't actually compare that to the volume of search. So for instance, like a client of ours that's a therapist, they might, let's say one of the things they offer is EMDR, and they're like, okay, great, I want to focus on EMDR. And so they put that in there, that maybe only 20 people in their area are searching EMDR, but you know, 1,000 are searching individual therapy. So that, and it's just being thoughtful about like what the market will bear, and then what you put in there is that part of it. And then we do, for all of our clients, and this is what we suggest too, we do update offers, we do update FAQs, we do that at least 3 days a week. You know, I don't know how much that's even helpful anymore. I'm not seeing yes or no. I mean, all of our clients like do well on their optimizations, but what I have seen more like really tanks it or does well is the reviews, just the sheer volume of how many you get and then responding to them. And I think that's just a harder thing for clients to do. They don't like to ask. They don't like to go through there. But those are all the top things that we recommend and do.
You mentioned about, you know, that therapist and targeting like what people are really looking for in their area. Are you using AI to identify what people are looking for in their area?
We use SEMrush. So they have AI components to it now, but we've been doing that for a really long time. So before AI was a thing, and it basically just gives us the volume searches, the amount of conversions that come off of those volumes, so we can research the whole market. We have a new tool that we're using now called Search Atlas, which I highly recommend. It's a great tool. And it does use AI to even expand on that knowledge base, I would say further. If somebody doesn't have those tools or doesn't want to do that, you know, for DIY, they could just use ChatGPT and see if they can get some good market research out of that. I don't think it'll probably be as accurate, but I don't know. I haven't tried it for that.
SEMrush is like such a great tool. I love it.
Yeah.
I spent some time without it and I missed it. So
I
started using it again. Yeah.
I tried to cancel it. I got really mad at them last year, because of the fees on the top of the fees on top of, you know, we were spending like $3,000 or $4,000 a month. And, I just got irritated, but then we got rid of it and I couldn't live without it. I had to go back.
Yeah. It's not that expensive for an individual business. I mean, it's definitely affordable. It's like what, $100 or something.
Yeah. If you have the volume of clients that we do, it's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, it gets up there, but it's a great tool. It takes a little learning, but it's fantastic when you're looking at things, and it really has helped me with I don't even know how many sites through the years of optimizing. So great tool out there. Speaking of search engine marketing, now let's get into Google Ads.
Sure.
With AI kind of coming in, you know, Google Ads like not as hot as they were before, or is this still like where are you pushing clients to them still, and have you adjusted budgets because of AI?
It's really interesting. I expected it to take a pretty serious hit, and we really haven't seen it yet. So I'm not sure what that is. I will say, last year we did bring out an AI component just because of how many we're managing. Little things like budgets going slightly over, or like time of day, a lot of the little things that you end up scheduling take a ton of time where I need our people to be focused on strategy. So once we implemented Optio is the name of the company that we're working with. Once we implemented all their AI tools into our ads, it like left so much more time for our team to basically do strategy and like really be focused on the ads. And like our CPLs have gone down actually 30%.
Wow.
So we've had a huge win with Google Ads still. The one thing I would say for people DIYing it, or anybody even working with an agency, is like the stats that I have now on the clients that are doing just Google Ads versus Google Ads with Meta, like huge difference. It's like 48% difference in conversion. So it does seem like at this point, if you don't have Meta Ads working with Google Ads, you're not going to get the same level of results at all. And we used to be able to just run Google Ad campaigns and get great results. So what I think is probably happening with this last click attribution is that most people are actually finding the clients through Meta Ads. They're, you know, might go to the website, or they're clicking on Google Ads to actually convert. That's my theory, because I mean, obviously the numbers are down as far as how many people are searching.
What's really frustrating for me is when people are going into Google and doing searches and the Google ads are dominating all the results. Like, I mean, 50% of what comes up on every page is a paid ad now. So all the effort that goes into the SEO efforts for, you know, all the different websites are getting pushed further and further down because of ads are getting lost because of all the Google ads. And I think it's because Google is trying to respond to this threat, right? That they may lose relevance to AI or, you know, other things. And as a consumer, as somebody that uses Google, and I use Google every day, I feel a little manipulated. Like, you know, I want to see more organic rankings. You know, now I got to go down to page two, page three to find enough choices. How much effort do you put into SEO versus SEM with your clients?
We're about 50-50 right now. Again, the heavy focus on meta ads, right? Because those are still performing incredibly well. So we're 50-50, but our SEM has totally changed. It's gone more the GEO route, which is like focused on the AI overviews, because I agree with you. Most people are irritated by all the ads, right? Or they don't like the way it's like Google has pulled out of their effort to make search good, and they have put all their effort into AI, right? And I'm sure that's their strategy. So in response to making sure our clients show up, we have to do the same thing. We have to focus on those AI overviews. We have to focus on where they're coming up for search. I don't know if you guys know that Bing is actually where ChatGPT gets most of its information. So it's also important now to rank on Bing, mm-hmm. not just on Google. So we're doing 50-50 because ads still perform incredibly well. But we recognize like less and less people are going to be thrilled with those search options. So we have to meet people where they're at.
Thinking about this, like, you know, we've always done targeting, specific messaging. Now that we're adding AI into that, and we can maybe get a little more specific into things, where do we draw the line? Like where's the ethical line, I guess, between like, you know, persuasion and manipulation? Like, where do you see that? Like, just, I guess, sort of getting into the ethics of AI.
So, I mean, I've been speaking, that's my last three conversations, basically, that I've spoken about are ethics and AI, and not enough people are talking about it. So I appreciate the opportunity to go there. When I look at the ethics of AI, it's the way that I'm speaking about it is, one, you have to decide as a company, how does this align with your values? And does whatever you're doing with AI, you need to think about the long-term consequences of, first of all, like for our clients in medical, is it HIPAA compliant? Is the stuff you're doing, like, are you actually taking data from your client? You can't do that. So there's considerations there that are even just current laws. But the ethics beyond that are, who do you want to be as a company? How do you want to respond to this? And what are your values surrounding it? So even though I told you our company is using a lot of AI, we do it in a very, what I call, boundary way. So we only use it in certain ways for certain things. We do not use it, for example, for video. We don't use it, example, for any of our creative. So we use it to try to make the pieces that we're doing faster, so that we have more time for strategy, creative, video, all those things. You know, we know that we could use AI video and be pretty effective with it. That's not something that aligns with what our values are, so we're not going to go there. As far as the manipulation versus the, I think I know what you're asking for that. I feel like digital marketing has been so focused on manipulation and lack of ethical practices over the last number of years. Very, very much so, right? Just appealing to fear, appealing to people's not their best selves, right? Doing things for the sake of money that are not good for people and not good for even the business in the long run is my point of view. So we've always taken a really strong stance against that. I would just, you know, I think people need to ask themselves, like, who do they want to be? What do they want to be a part of at the end of the day? Like, I want to use tools for good. I don't want to use them.
It goes back to like the black hat SEO stuff, right? That, you know, was late 90s, early 2000s, whatever it is. It's like, was manipulating the search results, but also it was manipulating people. You know, I mean, you're doing these kind of unethical things on your site just to trick people to land on your site to buy your product. It's like, that's not sustainable either, because if people are going to figure it out that, you know, you don't have a good product, well, you don't have a good product, you know, like, do it the right way. And it's good to hear. Like, I love to have that conversation because I've had so many conversations the other direction, you know. And it's sort of a follow-up here is, you know, one of the responses of that has been, you know, all those, do you accept the cookie things, right? And you know, all the blocking of cookies. how do you balance like personalization of ads? Like you still want to give personal ads. You still want to do the whole personalization thing when you can, but how is that done in a ethical way now?
I don't think personalization for ads is unethical. Like I don't have an issue with that. If you're targeting somebody that is potentially interested in a service or a product, like I actually think that's a positive thing in general. It's how you do it. You know, if you're doing it based on fear or the lowest common denominator, or even like, you know, false, what do they call that? Like when, oh my gosh, this is going to end tomorrow, right. Clickbait right. type stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it's, I like to appeal to people's, you know, higher self, I guess I would say. So I want to appeal to, if somebody is looking for therapy, I know like that's part of why we got into like helping mental health clients, because both of us as owners had that issue where we couldn't find people for our kids. It was hard to find people online that could help. Like if you're looking for something specific, you want to find that. That's not bad. That's good marketing, right? So I don't have an issue with the personalization as long as you're not approaching it in a bad way. And obviously you're not using any particular personal data to get there. Aggregated personal data like that, I don't have an ethical issue with that. I would say, I think like if there's one takeaway I could give around this whole area of marketing and AI, I believe so strongly that trust has been so eroded in marketing and so eroded even in business in general. Trust has become like the most scarce thing. And when something is scarce, it's highly valuable, right? So the highest value of what you can provide is showing that you're trustworthy in your marketing. So providing like very clear information, you provide your pricing, you provide detailed information about what somebody can expect. You speak to their higher self and let them make a decision on whether this is good for them or not, whether they want to do it or not. All of those trust indicators and having, you know, other people obviously say things about you that would align with that. I think that's a winning strategy. Because people don't trust. So they just have a high level of suspicion of everything they're seeing online. So what do you do to stand out in that?
Yeah, and I really appreciate that and respect that. You know, Russ and I both have daughters that are going into the mental health field or interested in going into the mental health field. You deal with a lot of clients in the health industry. We mentioned HIPAA guidelines and trust, right? Like, how do you balance the communications and the marketing to, you know, to patients or potential patients and adhere to those HIPAA guidelines and make sure that they don't feel like, oh my gosh, some of my information has been, you know, leaked out or shared, you know, with against my, you know, knowledge. So it's a real tricky field that you're dealing with. And obviously you're doing it in the right way. How do you go about doing it though?
I mean, we make sure we have BAAs with all of our clients, right? And then we have moved away from the tracking systems of Google and Meta, like for the pixel tracking, because they will not sign BAAs, which means that they're not going to promise they're not using that data. So that means that we can only do the higher level marketing. Our marketing has to be based on, this sounds bad, but it has to be based on good marketing. So it has to be based on good messaging. And then we have to use our skills to reach the right market. We can't rely on those algorithms to do that, because that would be unethical if we do it that way. So that's one piece. And I mean, and then we're, you know, obviously every client we sign with, we're signing a promise with them that we're not going to do that, because that could come back on them too. They're signing a promise to their clients. There's certain things in that field that are very tricky. Like you really can't, as a mental health provider, ask for a Google review. They can't like directly ask for that, because that can be somehow crossing the boundary or line between the relationship with that client and how they feel pressured for that on some level. So that's, you need to know those things. Like that's in their association. That's one of their ethical things. So we get around that by, you know, sending emails that give options for different ways that clients can respond, but it can't be directly from the provider. So there's things just like that, that we're always working within those boundaries. And then we've made a decision, like no advertising will we do whatsoever will ever have a negative fear-based advertising. So that's like a beacon standard. So our marketing is almost all, if we're going to do mental health, is almost all outcome-based. So it's not based on showing a picture of somebody who's suicidal and like talking about them being suicidal, because what the stats have shown is that that actually leads to more people feeling suicidal. So the last thing you want to do is that messaging or marketing that would hurt people. You want to show outcome based of like, this is hope for a future where you could be.
Yeah. Love that.
It's very like, why wouldn't you do something that works and is right. positive, right?
Right. It makes so much sense to go take the high road. You can do it.
Absolutely.
So Jennifer,
I think it works.
If there's somebody listening that would like to reach out to you that is like, okay, I've learned so much, I need some more, how do they reach out to you?
Absolutely. My LinkedIn profile, Jennifer Christensen, AK for Alaska. Definitely can reach me there. I do 15-minute free consults. I'm happy to chat with anybody. I love helping, you know, it doesn't have to be through Beacon, but I love helping people if they just want to, you know, send me something or chat about something related to marketing and an idea they have. And then Beacon Media Marketing is our website. Can definitely reach our team there.
And pickleball facilities fall into health, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Of course.
All types of health, right? Mental health, physical health. Yeah. Pickleball.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot wait to listen to your pickleball podcast. I'm very excited.
Third shot.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. It was a really great conversation.
You have a great company, great philosophy. Yeah. I love it.
And I have a feeling you'll be talking to Greg again very soon. All right. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow. All of the information provided is opinion-based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. Greg and I want your company to succeed, and we're happy to take your questions. We'd also love to hear your suggestions for future episodes. If there's an area where you need some solid business advice or help, let us know. We might be able to build an entire episode around it and get your questions answered. You can reach out to us by visiting our website, which is found in the podcast description there, DIYForBusinessPodcast.com. We thank you again for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.